toys will never die, and they will not be all AI driven. I'm 100% sure. And it's just a figurine that you put on top of a box. It was a product that was not required. I thought it wasn't. And now you can see with the numbers, I mean, 88 million Tonys sold, 7 million boxes out there, more than 50 million people, if you take all the families that are influenced by the product. I mean, it's an amazing story out of something that should have never worked.
The world beyond. Michael Mack and his Emotioneers of Tomorrow. The Mack One Podcast.
Hi, everybody. Michael Mack here, the founder and CEO of Mack One. Welcome to the world beyond. Our team at Mack One creates innovative theme park designs and media-based entertainment. We are the Emotioneers of Tomorrow. In this episode, my colleague Christina Rees will explore what the future of tomorrow holds. Let's dive right in.
Hello and welcome to another episode of The World Beyond. Today, I've got a very interesting guest for you in store. Here with me, live in Studio 78 in Europa Park, is Christopher Becker. Christopher Becker is an internationally sought-after professional in the fields of licensing and franchise, as well as an expert in the field of children's toys, consumer goods, and much more. He was the senior licensing manager for Lucasfilms, Disney, and Marvel for all three German-speaking countries, the head of licensing for the Walt Disney Company in Switzerland, the European franchise director for Sesame Workshop, and he's currently the director for licensing and partnerships at Tonys. I am thrilled to welcome you on Michael Mack's The World Beyond. Thank you so much for taking the time and coming by here in Studio 78, Christopher.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Wonderful. I'd like to start the podcast by asking you four quick fire questions so that we can get to know you a little bit more before we start the main discussion. Are you ready?
I'm trying to be ready, yes.
All right, wonderful. It's not going to be bad questions, I promise.
One.
What is one thing that you can't live without?
I definitely can't live without my family. That's why I even brought some of the members here. We're on our way through back home to the grandparents. So that's one thing I definitely will and cannot live without. It's my family.
Two.
What is something or who is someone that inspires you?
I really have to admit that this changed a lot during my life, and that sounds like it's over. It's definitely not, but it's kind of, it changes and varies. I think there's some business role models that I have that are really on top of probably some companies. Somebody like, if you read the book of Bob Iger, who's the recent CEO of the Walt Disney Company, somebody that really inspired me. But then also going back to the source of it, Walt Disney, for instance. However, there's even, some people in our teams that really inspire me quite a lot and quite a bit. If you look at the founders of the company that I work for now, Tonys, Patrick Fassbender and Markus inspire me a lot because they create products that we are working for now. It's two people, two men that create something, and that's really amazing. So I could also mention my wife. I don't know how she handles all the stuff at home. So, I mean, there's a lot of role models in my life, definitely.
Oh, wonderful. It's good that you're so inspired by so many people in your life. I mean, that's fortunate and great.
Three.
If a magical being granted you one wish, what would you wish for?
Wow.
I know, it's a tough one.
It's definitely a tough one, and probably we don't want to talk about world peace and all the things that are very obvious, I guess. If there's one thing, sometimes I probably wish I could go back in time and be a child for one more day, just seeing it once more through those eyes. That doesn't mean that life has changed to the worst, but I'm saying it would be really, really amazing going back for one day with the experience you have today and experience one of those days again. That would be really amazing, especially now during a summer vacation here in Germany, seeing what my daughter, what my nephew, what all the kids around are having a great time. I think I would want to experience that once more.
Oh, that's great. I think I'd want to experience that with you, especially here at Europa Park, just walking around as a child, bright-eyed, having fun. That sounds amazing.
Yeah, at Europa Park, I can say that even as an adult, I feel that every once in a while. So that's a good spot to be. But yes, definitely, that would be amazing to see it one more time through the eyes of a child.
Four.
And my last quick question. What is the best advice that you've ever been given?
There is a very funny, it's not actually considered funny, but there is a song by an artist called Baz Luhrmann, and it's called Wear Sunscreen. And wearing sunscreen sounds like one of those things, and he will explain that. So I advise all of you, probably go and Google the song, go to Spotify, or go to Apple Music, wherever you are, and try to find that. It was an inspirational speech that Baz Luhrmann, who's an, I think he's a director and also worked at one of the universities somewhere in the States, and he would give us an advice to all of his students. Wearing sunscreen is the only thing that really, really works. Because every other advice is something that people give you, and then you try to live by it, and it doesn't work.
Very true. Especially in these summer times, it's best to wear sunscreen. Well, thank you so much. That was very interesting. Let's jump right into the discussion. We usually like to start the podcast with a bit of a more provocative question to really jumpstart the interesting part of the discussion. Would you allow me to provoke you a little bit?
100%.
I love it. Let's go. In today's oversaturated entertainment world that is largely based on image-driven content, is it not short-lived and old-fashioned to sell an audio-only system that, like the Tony's box that, provocatively spoken, is based on a simple box that it can only play one audiobook at a time?
Here it goes back to those two that I mentioned earlier, Patrick Fassbender and Markus Stahl. When I was still working at Disney, I all of a sudden heard about the device first time ever. Not that I was in charge of the decision, but I heard about that device. And it's not a provocative question because I thought this project has to fail. Hmm. We're sitting in the midst of where every other parent has an iPhone, Android phone, whatever. They have access to everything. They have access to YouTube, to Spotify, Apple Music. There's nothing. Everything is on the tip of their hands, on their fingers. There's nothing that they wouldn't be able to gain access to with one of those devices. And I honestly thought that why in the world at 2017 or 18, I'm not quite sure, would you want to start a project like this? And this is, I think, what great brands and great people do, and that's why I refer to them as great people, is they don't care. They have a vision in mind, and they know that, or they had a use case in mind where their own kids would destroy their CDs and they couldn't use them, and probably audio tapes and whatever not. So they were looking at it from a different perspective. And if you look at the product today, and if you look at my one-year-old daughter taking her Tony figurine, she doesn't know what the content is, but intuitively she looks at it, puts it on the box, and it starts playing. It is absolutely not necessary, but one of the most necessary products out there. At the same time, it was something, it's only one audio drama. It's 45, 60, 75. And even if it was 3 hours of content, it's just a figurine that you put on top of a box. That's it. So why not use a CD? Why not use a tape? It was a product that was not required. I thought it wasn't. And now you can see with the numbers, I mean, 88 million Tonys sold, 7 million boxes out there, more than 50 million people, if you take all the families that are influenced by the product. I mean, it's an amazing story out of something that should have never worked.
That truly is an amazing success story. Do you think the simplicity and the lack of technology is part of the success story?
Well, actually, that's one, probably a bit of a rumor. The box has so much technology in there. So it's like, to come to the fact that it's really that smarter device takes so many people and so many of my great colleagues developing the technology behind it and everything that goes. And I can't even, you know, mention that because it's not my field of expertise, but there are so many people working on that device and making sure it's working properly. And it makes everything so easy for the consumer, which at the end is a child that might be only 1 year of age. But there goes so much into it. That's why I just want to mention that real quick. It is not that easy. And that's why even, you know, people talk often about competition and what they could do. Well, I could tell you this. It's the device, but also what we're talking about a bit is licensing, branding, and all that stuff. It's not as easy as it looks. It's great that the consumer at the end has one of the most simple products in hand that there is. It's a figurine. It's a box. You put it in place. That's all the consumer needs to know. All we can tell you is there's so much more behind that.
Well, it's even more impressive that it looks so simple, that it appears to be so easy. Well, that's just an amazing thing for a child, I think. Looking at your impressive list of past employers, among others, Simba Toys, Disney, Marvel, Tony's, etc., I have to ask, what kind of entertainment do you yourself enjoy most in your spare time?
being out there without entertainment, the only entertainment I probably look at is my Garmin watch and my, you know, at a bicycle or while running. That's kind of the entertainment that I enjoy, going back after a long run or bicycle ride and then checking out all the data that comes out of this. This is the entertainment that I really, really enjoy. At the same time, I have to admit that I'm still in awe that I'm working in an entertainment industry, that I see all the, you know, new movie releases, all the children's products, all the toys all the time. I honestly thought that one day I'd have to escape that entertainment bubble. I think I will never escape. And that's why I'm so blessed with the fact that I'm sitting here, not only at Europa Park, but, you know, at so many interesting locations, meetings. We're kind of living a dream in that industry. And that's why I'm thrilled to be out there in nature, running, cycling, and doing nothing but, as I said, sometimes looking at my watch.
Lovely. You've mentioned seeing all the new releases, and it does seem like we have so much content to enjoy and in so many different platforms. In the long term, it always seems to come back to the same few highly popular brands and characters. Do you think the market will continue to develop in that way, that we have the same few characters that keep coming back and are successful?
Well, first of all, the few characters are characterized by a lot of work, I guess. I mean, there's hardly any character, any licensed product, any brand out there that hasn't put the effort into it. What you see is that today, look at all the, you know, the trends, as you know, in the industry, like influencers, AI trends, all that stuff. I think there's something coming out of it. However, all the brands that currently are really successful are long-lived brands or have a lot of effort behind it. I just recently stumbled over an influencer, one of the most popular guys on, I think, YouTube. I hope, please correct me if not, but Mr. Beast, who now finally adds a toy line to his portfolio. Well, very interesting. And people think, well, now the influencers start to having a toy line. Well, it's not exactly true. The guy has been working for a very, very long time. And he has not, it's not only one guy. It's a huge company behind that. So what we definitely will see is either very short-lived, short-term hypes. And especially in the industry of toys, I can also always make only sure that people understand that you don't want your child to play with a not well thought of toy. So that's why we'll always take a little time to develop certain things in that industry. And that's why I do not believe in the hype of, you know, influencers short term, having something print on demand in 3 months or in 6 months, because even so far, we are really advanced in all that technology. Everything you kind of get out of it is a mug or a t-shirt or anything of that kind. If you really want to have a well-thought toy or anything that really is developed, it will always take time. And just to answer your question about all the brands out there, are the bigger ones the better ones? I think they're not the better ones, but they have a huge fan base. And that's why out of those, it will always keep developing. A Harry Potter franchise, Jurassic Park, like all the ones that have been out there for a very long time. Obviously, a lot of Disney, Star Wars, Marvel. These are all decades and decades of history. And that's why there is something coming out of it all the time. And again, that's kind of the story, I think.
Yeah, that's very true. I would agree. And as a storyteller myself, of course, I'm curious to hear your opinion on what makes a story or an IP internationally appealing.
It starts obviously with a great idea. But as it is at Tony's, and for instance in my team, I mean, it's not a Chris Becker show. It's like my boss Markus Langer has been in this industry for a very long time. My co-partner Eloise running the content. I mean, there's so many great people who have so much experience, and that's what I want to say about great franchises. It starts with a great idea, but then there's a lot of brilliant minds coming to that particular idea and making it a huge success. If the consumer at the end doesn't get what you're trying to tell him as a story, then it will never work as a successful, at least commercial franchise, because you need to translate from that great idea into all the fields of expertise, content development. You need to look into merchandise if you want to do that. You need to look into further development of the story. How do you engage with fans? All these things that now are learned, however, they look easy if they're done brilliantly. If you look at a brand like Lego, the adult fans of Lego are considered a regular word that everybody says, oh, the adult fans of Lego. Mm. Well, that's a huge and long history of a brand and a franchise. It's not that it came overnight. It's like it takes decades and a lot of failure as well to get to this point. And that's why I'm saying it takes a great idea, then a lot of people. And from that, it might become a great franchise brand or a movie, a great book, more books, all these things.
I think it's also important that the story can grow with you. For example, being someone that grew up with Harry Potter, of course, I'm still emotionally invested in these characters. And I have a lot of friends that still purchase toys from Harry Potter or still buy the new edition of the Harry Potter books. So I think it's also important to consider that the fan base evolves and to cater for that.
100%. And I'm not sure. I've never met J.K. Rowling or anyone who has created a fantastic book or series of books like this. However, if the story is right, I mean, she would bring it to publishers and some would reject the idea. And that shows how fragile the whole system is. It's not only the fans taking their families to the movies and then their kids and their and the grandkids of grandparents. Lord of the Rings, you know, has been told for the past, I don't know when it was created, but a lot of, you know, decades. And it becomes a great franchise because of all that. So it's so many factors that play into it. And there's not a single truth for how it becomes a great franchise. If there's not one, it's always a lot of hard work and effort. Mm. Those people that have brilliant ideas and, you know, book manuscripts, great songs, all these things, you hear that all the time, even in your within your friends. You hear somebody singing and they wrote their own song and you say, well, that's brilliant. It needs to be out there. But then there's so many factors that play into that. And what I also always think is that a lot of people who have those great ideas cannot let their, you know, little bird fly. They have that thing, they created something amazing, and then they're not willing to cooperate and work with others. Mm. I think that destroys a lot of those ideas. It's all about cooperation. In the talk we had a little bit previous to the podcast here, we talked about the opportunity of involving more people. That means that more people have to see and get an idea and have to understand what it's all about. So if that's not really happening and if you're not able to translate it into a bigger project, then it might fail. I'm not saying it will, but it might fail.
Mm, absolutely. And also you have to consider if you're writing a story or writing a song, are you writing it for yourself because you want to express yourself creatively, because you want to express what you're feeling? Or are you creating something that's for other people? But then, as you said, you need to let it go. You need to let other people take over in their areas of expertise and decide what cover it needs, what poster it needs. And you can't say, but that's not what I imagined, because it has to work for the market. It has to be right for the trends, right for the moments.
Absolutely. And that's why, I mean, independent music is something different than commercial music. And then sometimes independent music turns into commercial music. You hear all the guys that would say, well, I've went to see Coldplay when they were still playing in little, you know, some concerts, and now they're in the big stadiums and I don't like them anymore. Well, you know, I mean, it's like going from independent to commercial has a lot of concerns from a lot of people as well. But that they became that successful was probably great songwriting, great work, and always believing in themselves. I don't know, but it's kind of that what it looks like.
In your experience, is the European market or the German-speaking market different from the market in America or other places overseas concerning IPs and storytelling and what works?
100%. Let's talk about Germany in particular, because that's different from Europe. Even in Europe, the market is so divided. But in Germany in particular, you have parents as gatekeepers. That's a very interesting function that is not existing in a lot of other markets in Europe. So that means that if there is an age description on a packaging or on a package itself, then parents will most of the times follow those advices. So they'll probably say, if it's for 1+, they will never give it to a child under 1 year or the other way around. So they really keep the gates, make sure that you have in the first 2 years probably no screen time, that you are well protected as a child. In other markets, and I don't want to point out one particularly, but for instance, the UK, it's a bit of a different behavior. A lot of my colleagues and friends would watch movies of let's say, Star Wars or Lord of the Rings much, much earlier, even though there is an advice on when they should watch it. So there is definitely a different behavior of usage, as well as parents as being gatekeeper, for instance, in the markets.
That's very interesting. I think I would agree. And when I'm talking to my friends from UK, I think that they were too young to watch some of these movies, and they're saying like, oh yeah, I was a bit traumatized by that, but I still watched it because it was just a thing to do. And here my mother would have had my head if I'd sneaked off to the cinema at 10 years old to watch Lord of the Rings or something.
And there's another really interesting point about merchandise as well, because what you can get in the UK right after watching a movie might probably not be there in the German market. Why? Because that's something about retail as well, and how retail was understood probably a couple of years back, and it probably changes right now a bit, but it was not the consumer, it was the buyer of the retailer who decided whether he wants to take the risk of a new franchise. And we all know that there are a lot of franchises, even in a universe like Disney, that were probably a great success in the movies, or they were not success at the movie theaters at all, but then could not translate or could translate into merchandise all of a sudden. At my time at Disney, I remember that the Frozen movie was launched and we didn't have a single product on shelf. It took probably 9 months till the shelves, and everybody tends to forget that. Everybody thought that Frozen and Anna and Elsa were the big heroes from the very beginning. Well, they were not, because they were not available in the German market. That being said, they were also not widely available in all the other markets, but they would have bought it from the very beginning. It was more the manufacturers being a little late to the party as well. So it shows you that there's a lot of factors even there in, now you create a very successful movie, but that's not a franchise all of a sudden. It's just that movie, it needs to be successful, then it might translate into merchandise, and it might translate into a second part of the movie at you know, the end of the story. And then if there's a second part of the movie, the guys from merchandise are really overexcited because they will push a lot of products. And then you will have to hope that the consumer at the end will still buy the product and likes the second part of the movie as they watch the first one. So it is a very fragile construction within the field of licensing and branding all the time.
And of course, it's also a gamble, because you don't really know, even with big companies like Disney or Marvel, you're never really 100% going to know if this movie is going to be the bestseller, the top of the charts. And of course, it's a gamble to then produce many toys for it that are then going to stay on the shelves.
Yes and no, because Marvel has done something amazing, that is, they are a bit more independent from the movies nowadays. Why? Because probably when they started again with the Iron Man series or Spider-Man in the beginning, and I'm not too deep, even though I worked for them, that's not my real field of expertise. However, what they managed is to create a bit of independence from every movie release, because the whole Marvel universe, and again, now we're talking about a cluster of movies, like 10, 15 movies. You know, if you see one that's not so successful, you will still sell a lot of merchandise, because the whole universe comes together, a Spider-Man, an Iron Man, you have an Ant-Man, you have Captain America. And if one is successful in one part of the world, that doesn't mean it's going to be successful in the other, but you can at least produce product and you might be able to juggle around. Plus, Disney obviously has the size to overcome such hurdles. If you are really dependent on your very first movie and you feel it could be a merchandise topic as well, well, I think you really, really have to put your money where your mouth is. And that's really a risk at the very beginning of these things. So those people are really entrepreneurs. They are really, really, I mean, that's brave, you know, doing that in the licensing industry every once in a while.
But I think it's a risk worth taking, because it could become the next big thing and you have to take risks at first. Talking about target groups a little bit, for me, it seems like we've got a little shift going on towards more girl-based brands. Looking at the recent success of Barbies and other strong girl-based IPs, especially in the publishing market, would you agree? Is that something that you've noticed?
I'm not sure if I can agree here, but what we definitely see is that we are seeing girls being, for very good reasons, more in the focus of the industry. And I'm not sure, I don't have any numbers that would back that up, but I think that you see it in brands like Lego, for instance. They had their Lego France brand for a long time, and they always had it, But to really put a lot of perspective on it and really, you know, have the exposure and understand that girls have different playing needs than the boys in those construction sets, that is something that's really, you know, coming to focus right now. And that's probably, you're right, and it's probably a better focus in empowering of girls. Mm. Having two daughters myself, I'm really glad about that trend, if it is one. And if it was one, I can only say at Tony's, I think a company that has never played a major role, because I think it's well split between all genders and IP as well. Mm. However, I think you might be right that the focus is much more on those girl topics, women empowering topics. So yeah, it might be that kind of gives the visibility much more, and that's great.
Well, I certainly hope so. I think female characters have been a bit neglected in the past, and especially in the publishing industry where I come from, I've noticed that in the past, boy brands have been pushed towards being perceived as unisex, whereas girl brands were perceived as being exclusively for girls. So personally, I'd like to see a little bit of a shift there in the overall way that these are branded as well, and away from the boy brand and girl brand altogether. Yeah,
it is an interesting topic, and I can only agree with, again, sorry, going back to Marvel, but now all the female superheroes are coming up as well, and probably back in the days, and I'm not sure how far we have to go back, probably hopefully a little bit longer time, it was obvious that all the superheroes were strong men, and I'm really, really glad that this has changed, because as mentioned earlier, I think a lot of women and girls are the actual superheroes, and they do things that we never could do. So that's really exciting.
Lovely. I'm hopeful to see more of that. How important do you think physical toys will be in the future? And in these increasingly digital times, will we still be seeing that strong focus on collectibles and physical objects?
We'll see a strong focus on toys forever. In particular for the youngest, because whatever AI is going to do to us, whatever the technology is going to do to us, and whatever whatever new Tamagotchi is coming out, but there's going to be a massive requirement for the very first years of regular play with toys in all kinds, and kids define that by themselves. They turn regular objects into toys. They take a fork and a knife and play with them. They don't actually care. However, that shows that the field of especially youngest and toddler toys will never die in the way it does. And then what you also see, everybody's talking about, the toy industry being so much under pressure. Look at the Lego brand and look what they are doing with flowers all of a sudden, where adults, you know, of all ages, start putting together toys and flowers and putting them into their home, having Ferrari cars worth, I don't know, 700 euros as models that they're building themselves, because first, they can afford it. And second, because they still love to play with toys. They want to give it a purpose and say, well, no, I'm not playing with toys. I'm playing not with Legos, but yes, you do. And at the end, all you do is you display it, and that's why you give it a justification. But toys will never die, and they will not be all AI driven. I'm 100% sure. And I recently thought about it, talking about toys in general and the connection to AI or technology is something that has been there, at least in my time, for the last 20 years. And you see certain, you know, advancements there. You see certain toys having more interaction with kids. But so far, we're still at the very first steps of it. And yeah, obviously everything in the e-gaming and e-sports industry, that will develop rapidly. And I have no idea about it, so I will not talk about it. But I think there's so much more development happening there. But to finally answer your question again is, no, toys will always exist. I'm 100% sure. And it will be regular toys as well. It will not only be AI and featured or technology featured products.
Well, I'm glad of that, because I of course grew up with the physical toys that had no or almost no digital components to it. And I think it's very important for the development of the brain of the child to really have that physical only toy where they can project their own imagination onto, and to really hone that own imagination rather than just passively taking in what's put in front of you on a screen or even in a very highly processed toy.
I agree, 100%.
What do you think is next in children's entertainment in general? Do you have a prediction for us what you think might be the next big thing?
Well, if I was that smart, I would probably take it to the market right now. I'm unfortunately not. We talked about trends quite a bit. What I see is that the demand of products more immediate is something that's going to be a huge trend. And it actually is a trend already. It doesn't need my voice to say that. It's obvious. But I think the industry will have to develop more into the direction of immediate toys, immediate stuff that you can take from concerts or from an amusement park such as Europa Park, that you really connect more products to the entertainment that you're in right now, living in the moment, and then taking something home. I think that's going to be a huge trend of things. And still, even I talked about it, how we still need the regular toys, but obviously AI and technology is right now is not stopping, and we're going to see so much more. And you know, drone flying is going to develop. Cameras in particular, I think, are going to play a huge role. I also believe that construction sets and the connectivity there, you have great products like in slot racing. You see a huge development right now. Carrera cars going all of a sudden over flat surfaces, not the regular standard tracks anymore. So all the technology in AI will advance very rapidly and give us new play features. Plus, I also think that what you, like five, probably 10 years back, what you could do first time was play your Nintendo at home and then take it onto a Nintendo Switch and take it to the bus and carry it with you. I think that the extension there onto real life product is going to be something that we're going to see in no time. Taking your FIFA avatars or all these ideas from Fortnite and whatnot, more than just in a regular action figurine, back home somehow, or take it on the road on your mobile device, all these things I consider toys. So that's going to be a huge trend, I think.
I would be so excited to see that. And even with things like Pokemon Go or these things, seeing these coming into XR or something, that would be amazing, I think. That would be so cool.
Well, Pokemon Go is a great example for something that finally, at least, I mean, the kids took their mobile, ran against buses because they would not, you know, try to scan certain things. But however, if you look at even sports that I really like as well, if you go into something like a device called Swift, where you put your actual road bike on a device that you now ride in a virtual world all of a sudden, that engages with you on a AI technology way. At the same time, you're still doing your exercise. And that's something I see in kids much more in the future. I mean, I don't want to talk about these Apple Vision Pros and all these things that I that's not my field of expertise, but I think that kids probably can, everybody's talking about them laying on the couch and playing PlayStation. Well, then let's try to get them up and let's get them engaged in that world every once in a while, even though it's not the perfect forest that I go to for a run. But at least, I mean, it's not going to be all demonized. We should really make sure that those kids get their opportunities. And I think it's going to be amazing what we'll see in 20 years, probably then running through a forest, but having a completely different scenario. And you guys have that, I think, here in the park already with your virtual classes and all that stuff. I had the great experience that I'm, unfortunately, I got a bit seasick or motion sick, how you want to call it. But I think these are going to be developments that we're going to see much more.
Yeah, lovely. I'm excited for that. And of course, as you said, we are sitting here at Europe's biggest amusement park. How do you think amusement parks should or could benefit more from launching their own game-related content or board games, apart from the VR, XR things that we are already doing with what you mentioned, Coastiality and stuff?
I thought about it obviously before coming to that podcast, and I really think we have seen nothing yet, because I think there's a lot of stuff that's very obvious. You take home your plush or you take a book from the experience that you've taken, but I see so much more in there. I think about, how do you take home a roller coaster experience in the future? Is there anything that you could do to make sure that you collect all the roller coasters you have ridden around the world and make sure that you have a collectability around that as well? How do you store your immediate thoughts that you had at a roller coaster, your heartbeat, your whatever experience you had? Is there anything you can take home more? And I think that will show in the next couple of years to come that amusement parks, I mean, let's talk about the pandemic a bit, and let's talk about how everybody thought it probably would, you know, how is it going to go that so many people are going to go into a park? Well, look outside that window here. I mean, it's about to be a weekend, and there's so many people here, and they enjoy it so much, and they all, you know, spend their money And I think they're willing to spend their money not only on the experience, but they want to take something home. And much more, as I said, than back in the old days, their little simple plush or a toy figurine. I think there's much more that could be thought of for the future.
Lovely. So I think we'll have to do a brainstorming session on that later. Of course, we have our own ideas already, but I think, yeah, let's reconsider all of that. Some people are still afraid of technologies in the creative field and really scared that AI and the general improvement of creative storytelling is going to be more or less the death of human creativity and the death of human-driven storytelling. How do you see this in your field?
I think there's a lot of, as I said, demonized vision around that. A lot of people are scared. So am I every once in a while. It's not an obvious thing that AI is not going to affect us. I have no idea again about it. As I mentioned him before, Markus Langer, my boss, is really looking into that much more. So probably is our CEO, Tobias Wann, who have to see that much more than I probably have to. I'm not so much scared because, as I said, I have that great hope that toys in general, as being a core of our entertainment industry here, and kids will obviously advance and develop further towards technology and AI. However, at the same time, they're still kids and they still work the same way that we used to play, and they'll have probably some add-ons to it. However, I'm pretty positive that generation after us will also find a solution into regular play, into regular toys. And as we said earlier, I mean, a fork and a knife can be a great playset for a little one. So I'm obviously, I'll keep monitoring. We also ask the question, what's going to happen to AI, for instance, in licensing? Are we going to talk about license deals with machines? How are we going to protect that if we use AI, that the AI is not, you know, telling a wrong story? Think about an AI made up story and you put the name of your child into it. Somebody has to control it. I mean, there's obviously already people working on that. However, whom are you going to have the licensing deal with? How are the Disneys of the world going to make sure that all their Marvel, Star Wars and Disney characters are not used in a wrong way, because they need to stay true to the storytelling and they need to be really close to what the original story was, and the AI needs to control that. So who's controlling the AI? So I think there's a lot of questions, especially when it comes to licensing and the legal parts of it. So that's going to be a very exciting one. So I'm pretty sure if I hopefully, and especially my team, if we keep developing ourselves towards that, you know, new technology and towards this new opportunities, there's plenty of work for us, not only at Tony's, but in the whole industry. And we got to be prepared, and we should be a bit scared because that tips our toes. At the same time, you know, I mean, mankind will be able to even overcome it, I hope.
I think, and I hope so too. I mean, storytelling has been such a core part of the human experience, even back when we were all living in caves, so that I do hope and do believe that even an AI won't be able to take it away from us.
Yeah, and we'll find back to the caves in the worst case, so that's a good thing for us.
Lovely. Of course, we are already working with storytelling and creating our own IPs that can be taken home and that can enhance the experience and the emotional response that we hope to create here. And we have very popular characters like our Snorri and our own mascots, Ed and Edda. How would you perceive these characters as someone who's worked with IPs?
When I first came to Europa Park, it was about a roller coaster ride and me probably being a bit afraid of it. And as I said, I'm not the best in motion sickness. So that's how it started. And then I started looking at it from a little bit of an arrogant way, probably in the very beginning. I looked at the park characters and I thought, well, yeah, that's not exactly Disney, because I hadn't seen them before. And all that changed drastically when I realized what an amazing opportunity it is and how much love is in those characters. Not only are they there for decades and years, but also something like Rulantica that you guys create is an all new story and experience. And it's so exciting to see that it's one place in the world right now that's only here at Rust, where you see at Europa Park, you go to a Rulantica water park, and it's the only place where you can really experience it. And all of a sudden it turns into that massive franchise. Why? Because number one, all the families are visiting it. They're taking home something from it. And then you create storytelling within the attraction that is so worth taking home in these books and all your audio plays. that I had to change my perception completely. So it's not at an Edda, it's even a Kronasar hotel, it's Rulantica, it's all individual brands that you can only experience here. And that is something that is so unique, and it is so interesting that a whole brand franchise or licensing world develops around all that. So that, you know, when I realized that like those physical attractions here at a park is something that creates a franchise and licensing as well. I only knew it from the movies, and I knew it from video games, and I sometimes knew it from music as well. But experience that a park actually, and the influence that a park has on a family throughout their, you know, it's, as I said, you start with a three-year-old who's not supposed to go on one of the rides. So they wait until they're six. And then, you know, at 12, this is the first time they're allowed to go to the park on their own. And then the parents are still going because they like it. And the grandparents come with the little ones and make sure. So it's a family experience. And that is a franchise creation that is so unique that I think it gives you guys such a great opportunity for the future as well. Because yes, the park has been in existence for, I think, 50 years.
Yes,
coming
50
year, right?
Years,
so you have your great anniversary. So it took a very long time to get here. A lot of love and a lot of, you see that in the park everywhere. And now finally, there is a time that there's so many people have seen it, so many families and generations have seen it, that now it turns into something that is such a huge opportunity for a licensed brand or to be sold as well. Because of all the time the family, the founders have put into it, now it turns into a real commercial opportunity outside the park. And that's so unique and so exciting that I can only find here in Europa Park or some of the other bigger parks around the world. But I think Europa Park for Europe is very unique and outstanding. So,
well, thank you so much for your kind words, and I personally have to agree. I think it's such a great place that has these very strong emotional, personal memories tied to it as well. And to be able to offer that to the guests and to offer them things to take home and to remember these moments by is so very precious.
7 years from now.
And as always, our last question on this podcast is, what will the world look like in 7 years' time regarding your areas of expertise?
If only I knew. And if we could ask even what it's going to look like in 1 year's time. As we said, I mean, number one, there's going to be a great foundation of what has always been existing. And I'm pretty sure it's going to stay a very solid foundation for all we're going to do in the future. That's number one. The other thing is we're going to be so much further in technology, but that's something everybody in my role would say right now. We don't know what it is. Some people would probably know, but I don't. But I'm pretty sure what we have to adapt to is being faster to market. That's one thing for sure, because the demand of the consumer is going to just, you know, we're going to see more people demanding more at a shorter period of time. That's one thing we'll all have to adapt for. And then the other thing is there's probably going to be even more consolidation in the market. You have seen Disney acquiring Marvel and Star Wars. You've now recently seen Paramount, Nickelodeon, and you see so much merger on the field of the big entertainment companies that I think that simply will continue. The biggest will probably even add more franchises and brands to their portfolio. That makes us see bigger players, makes our business a bit less diverse. At the same time, and that's a great trend that's always happening, if you see more big players, you see that the independent will rise as well. You see people like Mr. Beast being an individual YouTuber now all of a sudden starting their own toy line. They're still working with the established toy companies because they know best how to come to retail. So I'm not worried. All I'm saying is there's going to be huge adaption in terms of speed, in terms of the players in the market. And I think we will only have to adapt that nothing is for granted anymore. It's not like even when I started the job, it was quite obvious how buyers and how retailers would react, you know, if it's successful. These times have changed. You don't know that you have a direct merchandise selling of all the active players nowadays, and you see so much development. I think we gotta stay hungry and stay focused on everything that's out there and try to sense ourselves what are the best, biggest next steps.
Wonderful. I'm excited to see what's next. And thank you again so much for joining me here today. And thank you at home for listening. I hope you tune in again next time where we uncover more of what the world of tomorrow will hold.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for this inspiring exchange. Together as Emotioneers, we have once again gained fascinating insights and expanded the boundaries of the known. To all our listeners out there, remember that the world is full of undiscovered possibilities. Go out and shape our future. Until next time on The World Beyond.
Mac One presents The World Beyond. Brought to you by Michael Mack and his Emotion Is of Tomorrow.